Yo! Listen!
So now it's time to turn it up. Surf the radio waves as we begin to burn it up. We all up in your area like landscape. Definitely bringing you the power slamming pancakes. It's the mandate that you tune in. It's time to move out so we can move in. And recognize that this is no illusion. I'm here to clear the air so that there is no confusion. It all started off in the book of Genesis, when Jacob was wrestling with who he thought was his nemesis. And when the man saw he couldn't overpower him, he touched his hip, but he really couldn't devour him. And from that point, then we hear a name change. Rearrange the game, so now we gotta change. So I'm here to let you know it's time to listen to the Pancake and Power Slam Show. Let's go!
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam Show.
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam Show.
Turn it up.
Indeed, indeed, indeed. It's the Pancakes and Power Slam Show. We are once again here live on a Tuesday night on the heels of WWE Hell in a Cell. I am Chris Featherstone representing Crave Wrestling along with my esteemed co-host, Derek. How are you tonight,
sir? Elizabeth. Elizabeth.
Elizabeth.
Will you marry me?
Shout out to Randy Macho Man Savage, one of the most memorable. What was that? SummerSlam 92, was it? I mean, not was it SummerSlam 91 when he made the proposal, or was it SummerSlam 92?
It was match made in heaven with SummerSlam 91, and then it was a few weeks earlier he had proposed to her.
Yeah. He proposed to her, and Piper was like. Yeah, Piper was, like, really, like, supporting him, because Piper was doing some commentary at the time, and, you know, that was really interesting. And the match made in heaven. The match made in hell was what? It was Hogan and was it – what was the match
Hogan
made?
Hogan and Warrior.
The match made in heaven. Hogan and Warrior versus Zeus, Slaughter, and
No, Zeus, it was Slaughter, General Adnan, and Colonel Mustafa, a.k.a. The Iron Sheik. Yeah, the match made in hell. Sergeant Slaughter, General Adnan, and Colonel Mustafa.
Let's see. I don't know. I knew it was a 2-on-3 handicap match.
347-884-8452.
Absolutely.
Let us know.
Call in live. Chat room as well. SummerSlam 91, what was the match made in hell? I know the match made in heaven was the wedding. Yeah, man, you are on it. I'm usually the trivia guy, but it was Slaughter,
yeah.
Mustafa, and Adnan. Absolutely. Hogan and Warrior defeated those three. And, yeah, Colonel Mustafa, General Adnan. Yeah, the Iron Sheik actually had the nerve to have a early 90s SummerSlam spot. But they really did a lot with Slaughter at the time. I mean, he was world champion around that time, and it was a dicey move because it was on the heels of, Desert Storm, right?
And, Desert Storm, and yeah, he was probably the most hated villain or heel in wrestling history, almost Sergeant Slaughter at that time.
Yeah,
was, in my opinion, as far as recent history in wrestling, he was an absolute disgrace.
Yeah,
but it was good for business.
Yeah, it was. Triple H. I mean, I know we're more of a PG era, but I mean, it wasn't like over the top, kind of scandalous Attitude Era yet. It was still more of a PG programming, but I mean, they really, really had a lot to do with emphasizing gimmicks at the time, and that was, I mean, you're talking about best for business. I mean, that was best for business as opposed to what we're seeing now. SummerSlam 91 was it. I don't know why I said Zeus, though. Zeus was, he did play a
1989,
part.
1989, I think.
yeah, it was somewhere around there. He did play a part. I think it was like him and Hogan and Savage against, like, Zeus and someone else.
Hogan and Brutus Beefcake against Zeus and
yes.
Randy Savage,
and Savage
after the Mega
yes,
Powers
yes.
broke up.
Yes. Absolutely. That's what it was. And that was, SummerSlam 89, I believe it was. That was a really interesting, SummerSlam 89. Hogan and Beefcake against Warrior, against Savage and Zeus. So, and that was around the time where No Holds Barred came out in 89, too. And that was
I just recently saw that movie. I've never seen it before until like 3 or 4 weeks ago.
For the first time? No
way. For the first time.
For the first?
Seriously.
Wow.
It was corny as I could ever believe. But I just saw it.
It was absolutely corny. But here's the thing, though. Watching it almost 25 years ago, I thought it was like the best movie ever. You know, so I was a kid.
I could dig it.
I was behind Rip. You know, Rip, let it rip. You know, and Hogan was just, you know, he was just against the world, and then Zeus, and he was like the big, you know, the villain of the movie, and I was really behind Rip the entire time, and they really did it. But 25 years later, I look back at that movie and I say, wow, that was a horrible movie. And I don't know, it was just a bad movie in hindsight. Back then, it was awesome. Now,
back then, to an 8-year-old or whatever, it's
yeah.
I got it. Yeah, exactly. Suburban Commando,
yeah.
I thought was the best movie in the world.
Wow, that's another. I'll tell you another good one in the 80s was Body Slam with Piper.
Yes,
Body Slam. Yeah, that
Captain
was, like,
Lou Albano was in there.
Yep, Captain Lou. They had a couple of the, head shrinker. Well, not head shrinkers, but
yeah.
It was like the couple Samoans, a couple of
Samoans. Yep.
Yeah, and that was a very interesting movie as well. And I can't think of any other wrestling-oriented movies back in the late 80s, early 90s. 347-884-8452, if you can think of any awesome movies from that were back in the – yeah, it was Sam Fatu that was in there. He wrestled as the Tonga Kid back in the WWE back in the day. He was a part of the Islanders, so – it's pretty interesting. He was one of the Fatus, and it was really interesting, very 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 interesting. And if any, like I said, if anybody has the any other movie from the late 80s, early 90s, 347-884-8452, or log in live to the chat room, tweet at Crave Wrestling. Great sci-fi flick I see on the chat room. I don't know what movie this person is mentioning, but I do have a trivia question to start off with. Matilda was the mascot of what tag team? Matilda was the mascot of what tag team? We got a lot to cover tonight, other than... No, They Live with Roddy Piper. Oh, okay. That's I suppose that's a sci-fi movie.
They Live with Roddy Piper, of course.
Yeah.
It wasn't a wrestling movie, but Roddy Piper was in it, so.
Yeah, Piper was in it, yeah. So
it's a John Carpenter movie, so it was good. I remembered everybody. That's a great movie, but.
Yep. Well, we got some Hell in a Cell. We got some Raw. Of course, SmackDown. Flavor of the Week. Impact Wrestling on the heels of Bound for Glory. Impact, and then ROH time permitting. Flavor of the Week this week, like I said last week, we're going to do part three of the Thumbs Up, Thumbs Down. I got some more names on the list for the which one of these people are in the Hall of Fame. So we're going to go with that later in the show. So let's start with Hell in a Cell. We had Damian Sandow against Kofi Kingston as a pre-show. And now, mind you, an original pre-show was Biggie Langston versus Curtis Axel, but WWE.com reported it, and I actually wrote an article about it on that day, on Sunday, about the news on Bleacher Report that the match was nixed because Curtis Axel was injured. But interestingly enough, he appeared as one of the people, one of the wrestlers during the Randy Orton celebration on Raw, but I don't know. And he surely wore his Intercontinental title. It just seems like it seems like Curtis Axel is so – I think he realizes that this is really all he has. I mean, and it's sad, too, because I remember watching the Mr. Perfect DVD and just how – he was really instrumental in that DVD, but, I mean, that was, what, like almost 10 years ago, and just nowadays, like I said before, no charisma, and he needs to drop that Intercontinental title as soon as he gets well. They're shifting the Biggie Langston feud to Dean Ambrose, which I actually prefer. I think Ambrose and The Shield would make Big E more over as a babyface than Curtis Axel would have. But the thing is, the only thing with that is that I would have rather Big E defeat Curtis Axel, get Axel away from the Intercontinental title hunt, and then start a Intercontinental title feud between Ryback and Big E Langston. That would have been my preference.
It would have been a preference. I mean, the thing about Curtis Axel is I kind of feel sorry for him. I mean, the footsteps that he has to walk in, now he's not even close to touching Mr. Perfect. And, I would have preferred to see him drop it to Biggie Langston, whether he's really hurt or not. I mean, anybody can get injured at any time. It's a thing of this, what are we going to do with this guy? We owe it to his dad, yeah, but also he's got no charisma himself. Should we shelf him for a while, maybe bring him back later? They put him with Paul Heyman, and according to certain individuals I know, that Paul Heyman is this big wrestling guy. It takes everyone to the limit. I don't think that Curtis Axel really fits in well with the WWE chemistry. I would have dropped the Biggie Langston. I agree that, you know, Biggie and Dean Ambrose is a lot better feud. But even for that, I kind of look at Biggie Langston as someone that's just kind of, he's there, but he's not really made a presence known yet. So it's kind of 50-50. Curtis Axel, what do you do with this guy? I mean, he's got to find it in himself, obviously, to carry the card. But I don't see it happening. So was it a good move for them to take Curtis Axel out if he was or was not injured? Probably. Other than that, what else happened?
Yeah, I agree with Biggie Langston not really having much of a presence. I think that he was overshadowed by, because he came in last December. He came in, being Dolph Ziggler's muscle, and this is when Dolph Ziggler was with AJ, so it was the three, and he's been under the shadow of both of them, because when Ziggler became a babyface in the springtime, It was still, he got away from Big E, but still Big E was just coming out with AJ. And so he's been under the shadow, he's been in the shadows of either Dolph Ziggler or AJ just about his entire television run in the WWE. And now when he breaks out as a babyface, and I've said this before, when he was in NXT, he was the most popular babyface of what, late 2012. He was champion. He was the second ever NXT champion. Defeated Seth Rollins, and so he knows how to be a face. And his Twitter account is hilarious. He's funny. He was funny in the mic in NXT, and so he knows how to become a babyface. I think the WWE just needs to let him be himself, and he got over doing that. He got over being himself, and I think if they give him the reins, if they just don't hold him back so much, you know, give him the mic, let him be funny, people will start liking Biggie Langston, who do not follow NXT. So hopefully we'll see that. And so next in the card, we have Goldust and Cody Rhodes defeating the Shield and the Usos. This was a fantastic way to start the show. This match was just top notch. I'll tell you what, the tag team division now, since the Rhodes brothers have been implemented in the tag team division, they were the missing link to the tag team division. I mean, two pay-per-views in a row. Because in Battleground, they were the Battleground when they beat the Shield and got their jobs back. That was by far the best match on Battleground. Battleground was just a horrible pay-per-view. It was almost as bad as Night of Champions. That was the best match. There was so much passion, so much emotion in that match. And then again, I mean, they opened it up. The tag team division is getting some life again, and I absolutely love it. I think that this, with the implementation of the Rhodes brothers in the fold, I think that the tag team division has once again got some life to it. It's got some vitality to it, and I really think that they got something good, and they should continue to invest in the tag team division because it's been the best. It's the best it's been in quite some time.
It's the best it's been in quite some time. I totally agree. This was the missing link to the tag team division. And to bring in Goldust, that is such a fresh breath of air to WWE. Someone like me, I can watch Monday Night Raw and say, oh, are you kidding me? Goldust is back. And it's phenomenal. He picked up where he left off. People were yelling last night that was awesome. I mean, they told him he hadn't lost it yet. And he absolutely hasn't. And him and Cody Rhodes together, I want to keep this thing going as long as they can, and as long as it makes sense. And nothing can last forever, but just to see Goldust and Cody Rhodes out there. And I agree, it was an emotional time at the Battleground. And again, last night, kicked it off. It just brought a great feeling going into the pay-per-view that this pay-per-view may not suck as bad as the last two. And really, the pay-per-view in a whole didn't. I thought it was a decent pay-per-view. But just to get back to the Goldust and Cody Rhodes, it's absolutely awesome to see those two together. It's awesome to see Goldust backing in because it brings an old fan like me back to say, okay, I really do want to watch this, and I really got what I expected and what I deserved as far as being a Goldust and WWE fan, so... I love that match all the way. I love the angle. I want to keep it going.
Absolutely. And then next on Hell in a Cell, we got, again, trivia question. Matilda, come on, tweet. Come on, chat room. Come on, listeners. Matilda, this shouldn't be that difficult. Matilda,
I know the answer. Can I say
mascot?
It?
Go ahead.
Okay, it was the British Bulldogs. Are you crazy? Are you kidding me? David Boy Smith, Dynamite Kid.
Absolutely. Matilda was the mascot Bulldog. Matilda, next question. This actually goes out. Derek, you can answer if you want to. What pay-per-view did The Undertaker debut? What pay-per-view did The Undertaker debut? All right. Uh-oh. Yeah, I think I might have stumped him. Chat room.
No, you didn't stump me. I want to give the chat room a chance. Let's go chat room.
347-84-8452. Sure. Yeah, didn't stump Derek.
If you say WrestleMania 7, then don't call in.
Right, because it's the wrong answer.
Exactly.
So call
I'm
in live.
To people.
Yes, he's trying to derail people as far as the right answer. So chat room or call in live 347-884-8452. Tweet at Crave Wrestling if you know the answer. Then next we had on Hell in a Cell, Miz in-ring promo. I mean, and then that makes Bray Wyatt, it brings Bray Wyatt out. And what's so bad about what I'm seeing right now is that essentially it seems like the Miz really didn't lead to a match against Bray Wyatt, but more of a time filler, because I really don't see anything big coming from the Miz, especially what we saw on Raw. And so it saddens me, because I think that the Miz has so much potential. I still want to see him work as a babyface. I don't necessarily think that's going to happen, but I still think they should. I mean, here's the thing. Miz should be the third man, since he has been feuding with the Wyatt family. Of course, on Raw, we'll get to Raw, but we did see Bray Wyatt jump two people, two former world champions. And so the Miz would be the third WWE champion in that team against the Wyatt family, and that should be a six-man tag at Survivor Series. I don't see why that would work. And if they did do that, that would give the Miz a little bit of he would gain a little bit of momentum again. Other than that, the Miz doesn't really have a shot at any type of major spot. He kind of had his major spot in when he was feuding with Orton a little bit during the Daniel Bryan feud, when Orton beat him up in his hometown and he tried to beat him up in St. Louis. And so he had a little bit of exposure, but not quite. He was just a little decoy in the monotony of the Orton and Daniel Bryan feud. But I think they should give him a chance, and I really think they should, as a babyface. But we saw Kane return, and he forces Rowan and Harper to retreat, and then he looks at the Miz and chokeslams him. We'll get into what happened with Kane on Raw and how Derek and I feel about that. But as far as Hell in a Cell on Sunday, Miz, that kind of really gave him a bad spot.
It didn't work for the Miz. And the thing why is because SummerSlam 1990, The Undertaker, was great. However, I just want to say that the Miz, if he was in SummerSlam 1990 Survivor Series 1990 with The Undertaker, then that might have been his debut. But
that is correct. Survivor Series 1990.
But the Miz has Survivor Series, 2013, to make his great remake. I don't know. I understand what you mean about the Miz. The Miz is somebody. You could go either way. He could be somebody great that you could kind of put your money on, but again, at the end of the day, maybe not. And I don't really see much with the Wyatts either. I mean, I love their intro. I love their promos. But they've got to – they can't put their money where their mouth is. And I love the Kane on Monday Night Raw. I don't want to spoil. I hope nobody DVR'd it and don't know that Kane returns. But he does. Heard it first here on Pancakes and Power Slams. Power to you. So, again, with The Miz, I do believe that The Miz can be somebody great. In the past, I've kind of compared him to a young Chris Jericho. And I do see that in him, but it's just how the WWE wants to use him. Give the guy a chance. They have in the past. He's still prominent. I mean, he's there. You know who The Miz is if you're a somewhat avid wrestling follower. But on the most part, I got the trivia question right. Nobody in the chat room. There's a lot of answers. And on Twitter, nobody did. I'm Derek, the Pancakes and Power Slams co-host. Prove me wrong. 347-884-8452. Let's get back to Hell in a Cell with Chris Featherstone.
Well, I suppose that makes Derek special. Or as the
The trivia king.
Church lady was, well, as the church lady would say on Saturday Night Live, well, isn't that special?
And I
so
am
let's
special.
Go to, I see in your own Pancakes and Power Sales world here. So the next question we have, and this is not for the host. The next question is, who was the first WWE Hardcore Champion? Who was the first WWE Hardcore Champion?
Oh.
Next we have on Hell in a Cell, Fandango and Summer Rae defeating Great Khali and Natalya. It was more of a breakout moment for Summer Rae, and this is what bothers me a bit. I don't like how the broadcast team, JBL, Cole, Jerry Lawler, how they insult our intelligence and say things like, oh, this is Summer Rae's first wrestling match ever. But then they say that JBL is the general manager of NXT and Summer Rae wrestled in NXT. So I don't like how they kind of blur the lines like that. They try to distinguish it so much that they should not just do it. I mean, they should just save the whole fact that saying Summer Rae is first wrestling match ever. It hasn't, it wasn't, and they shouldn't have done that. As far as the match is concerned, from SmackDown, I knew that they were going to do that. I knew that they were going to go ahead and give that match up. But I mean, I guess it was a spot filler, and it was more of a Summer Rae breakout moment. But too bad for, I tweeted this during the match, poor Natalya. I mean, she really should be more in a better spot than this, especially losing at Hell in a Cell. That was just horrible to me. But at least, you know, we'll talk about Raw. She got some redemption, but Natalya needs to be away from anything like this, and she should be in the Divas title. She's the best Divas wrestler, but unfortunately they're really giving her the shaft all the time.
Yeah, they're giving her the shaft all the time. What do you think about poor Fandango? I mean, they're using him to push Summer Rae, kind of like what they did
poor
with Mark Fandango. Brown's stable. Poor
is
Fandango.
That, is that actually, is
he
actually
is a better talent than what Summer Rae could ever want to be, and the Khali. Fandango, they should put him in the forefront. Summer Rae, forget about it. I mean, this is Mark Merrow and Sable all over again. No way.
Yeah.
Give me a break.
That's a good analogy.
They've seen that before. It failed. Where's Sable now? Where's Mark Merrow now? But Fandango deserves much better. Fandango should have been there. He should have made the pinfall submission. Summer Rae, come on. Fandango deserves much better. Next.
Fandango was Fandangone. And as far as where Sable and Merrow is, yeah, he is just a spot-filling mid-card talent that was a failed project that just ticks me off every time I think about him, because Chris Jericho put this man – He put that man over at WrestleMania, his debut match with the gimmick, and then after that, nothing.
Exactly.
Chris Jericho deserves better.
So does Fandango.
It's despicable how they would allow – I mean, and it's sad. You know, Jericho's my favorite WWE wrestler, but he puts over everybody that breathes. It wouldn't surprise me that Hornswoggle turns heel and he puts over Hornswoggle or El Torito against Chris Jericho, and he puts over El Torito. But it's just, you put over Fandango to make him, and I've said this before, Chris Jericho putting over people all the time is not, it does not help that wrestler. People like John Cena, and this is, and it hurts me to say things like this, but people like John Cena putting people over, that works. People like Sheamus putting over people, that works. People like Randy Orton putting over people, that works. Why? Because their win-loss record is lopsided. They have way more wins, and when they lose against someone, it's more meaningful. Jericho, on the other hand, he doesn't have an impressive win-loss record. A lot of times he comes in as the underdog. So that's not necessarily putting over people the way that people should be put over. I mean, he put over Evan Bourne, John Morrison, and Fandango. Those are three names that he's put over the past few years. Evan Bourne is an afterthought. He was injured. He broke his ankle, yes, but they can't even find somewhere to put him because he's not relevant enough. John Morrison was released, and Fandango is a sideshow comedy mid-carder. And so I just don't like what they're, I just don't like how they do that. But the thing is, Fandango is, I don't see any type of rebound for him. I think that the WWE has counted their losses when it comes to Fandango. And to be honest with you, I think that Summer Rae may help Fandango because she is a personality of her own. The people, you know, a lot of people like her. A lot of people, you know, are attracted to her and cheer for her because of her looks and things of that nature. So Summer Rae with Fandango helps Fandango, but I don't think much of anything can help Fandango, honestly.
Well, I agree with you with the Chris Jericho losing to Fandango. I mean, they both deserve better. It's almost like Ohio State losing to Michigan. It's bad that, you know, that Chris Jericho has this against him that, hey, I lost to Fandango, but Fandango lost to worse people off than me. So I agree with you, Chris. Fandango and Chris Jericho deserve better, and it's something that we just have to deal with. So I totally agree. Fandango is a much better competitor than what the WWE portrays him to be. So we're in agreement
with
this, yes.
And I agree with that as far as Johnny Curtis the person. I think that Johnny Curtis is a good competitor, but the gimmick may have the gimmick and the music may have trumped him as a competitor. And a lot of times, unfortunately, times like that it happens, and they might as well kiss any type of push goodbye. Next, we'll just slide through a lot of these matches here on Hell in a Cell. Biggie Langston versus Dean Ambrose, count out. He got busted up pretty bad, Biggie Langston did. But it was a decent match. The only thing was there, I can tell that it was thrown together. I think many people could tell that they were thrown together because although they tried and tried, there were just some spots that just didn't work. I mean, and then I don't know if anybody noticed. Chat room, let us know, or tweet at Crave Wrestling, or call in live 347-884-4452. There was a spot that Dean Ambrose did, and, you know, of course, most of the people that are listening here and that listens, you know, every week, and a lot of people who comment on my articles on Bleacher Report and Wrestling Inc., they're smarks, you know, they're smart marks. They know the game and they try to get ahead of the game when it comes to wrestling. So a lot of people are smarts. A lot of people understand that, you know, the wrestling is an art, but at the same time they call out moves. Okay, so that I don't think that's nothing that's a surprise to anybody. But you do it discreetly. You do it incognito, and it was a move that Ambrose called out. He did a reverse, and he said belly to belly so loud, and I heard it so vividly. And then right after, Biggie Langston did a belly to belly suplex on Ambrose, and I said, "Oh wow, it's gotten to the point where Ambrose is probably upset or just kind of agitated that it's not working as seamlessly as they probably wanted it to be." And it was quite embarrassing. of that. That was a quite embarrassing moment of the night.
It was embarrassing, and I enjoyed Dean Ambrose's wrestling and skills as much as anyone else. So, keep that ball rolling. Again, let's fly through a Hell in a Cell for a bit because we got a lot of stuff to cover. 347-84-8452. Tweet coming to the chat room. Let's finish up Hell in a Cell.
Again, who was the first WWE Hardcore Champion? All right, next, let's go to... Oh, come on. You're not supposed to answer. Yeah, but that's correct. Man,
nobody
Mankind
else
could. Yeah, that's true. I guess Derek is the... Yes, that's a really good comment on a chat room. We'll probably see it on Botchamania. That's a very, very good comment on the chat room there. Botchamania need to pay me to promote them, but I'll give that. That's appropriate. That's an appropriate comment because I definitely could see that happening. And then we got CM Punk defeating Ryback and Paul Heyman. I just want this to be over. I want this gimmick to be over. It looks like Raw kind of made that happen as far as the CM Punk, Paul Heyman, Ryback, anybody else, Curtis Axel, over. I'm so glad. It stretched out too much. And the thing is, CM Punk and Brock Lesnar really set the stage, and nothing even close else that CM Punk and Paul Heyman feud, nothing was even close to Punk and Lesnar. Punk and Lesnar was one of the best matches of the year, hands down, and it's hard to continue a feud after that because nothing was even close to living to that. And then you put Ryback in the fold, not the worst wrestler, but certainly not the best. And CM Punk Ryback just hasn't been gelling, and I'm so glad that it seems like it's going to be far away.
It's going to be far away. And again, when you watch CM Punk now against his opponents, there's nothing that can rival what he had with Brock Lesnar. Not that it was the best rivalry that ever happened, but again, you watch Brock or CM Punk now against Heyman's cronies. It's kind of a lost match. You know, CM Punk's going to win. I mean, they've been lackluster matches as far as I'm concerned. So what's next for CM Punk? I hope something good because, I mean, he's got his ticket going right now. So I don't really see too much going on farther with this feud that hasn't already happened.
Yeah, absolutely. And what we saw on Raw, we'll probably see something different. So I certainly hope so. Next we have Los Matadores versus Real Americans. It was funny how they developed this feud, you know, and I really think that, I mean, kudos to Zeb Coulter. He has been just gold on as far as helping out the Real Americans. And so, yeah, I mean, it made sense. You know, giving Los Matadores some love, and Real Americans was definitely a good way to continue what they have with Los Matadores, which I don't believe will last much longer.
I don't think it's going to last much longer either. I just don't believe in it. I mean, with the little guy running around in the bowl suit, just it's ridiculous to me. I don't get it. I don't buy into it. I think it was a kind of a foolish move on WWE. And Zeb Coulter is making the Real American still a prolific tag team, I suppose. I mean, they lose a lot. They win sometimes. They've kind of gotten stale themselves. But kind of keep this thing going, and what else is going to happen after this? So let's just stay tuned.
Absolutely. And, again, back in the chat room, I absolutely agree with another comment. I love JBL's comments about El Torito. I think it's absolutely hilarious that JBL actually portrays him as a real bull. And then when he came on his black suit, he said it's two bulls and maybe multiple bulls. I noticed that too, and I think JBL is just gold on the commentary booth especially when he talks about the El Torito.
Good. I like that. I like JBL on the commentary booth. I take that much. Yeah.
Yes. Absolutely. Next, we have John Cena defeating Alberto Del Rio. I I didn't think that they were going to actually run with Cena being World Heavyweight Champion. But I'll tell you this, though. I will admit, and I'm not ashamed to say it, John Cena winning the World Heavyweight Championship is exactly what the legacy, the prestige, the honor needed. Now, there's no dispute that John Cena is the face of the WWE. He's been the face of the WWE. We even talked about that last week. He's a draw. He's a big draw. He's been the guy for over a decade now, and this is what the World Heavyweight Championship needs. Sheamus, and I mean, you know, no disrespect to Sheamus, but even Daniel Bryan's initial run, he wasn't as popular as he is now. Big Show, I mean, these are Del Rio. These are the names that we had to deal with as champions the past couple of years. And for the last 2-3 years, I mean, it's just been – it has not been prestigious at all. And I think that John Cena definitely brings life back to the World Heavyweight Championship.
Yeah, he does, but it kind of makes me wonder, did he really have a tricep injury? I mean, everyone saw his elbow,
yeah,
but
– must have come back for 2 months.
Exactly. I mean, is that – well, I remember back in the day when Triple H, Stone Cold Steve Austin picked him up and he was in some kind of car, a limo, I think, and he picked him up with some big bulldozer and dropped Triple H, and he was back within a couple of weeks after being smashed in a car from 20 feet up in the air. So anything's possible in the WWE.
That's a storyline, though. Cena, I suppose it was deemed a partial tear, but still, I mean, 2 months. From surgery straight to...
That's crazy.
You know, I don't know. Yeah, it is, absolutely. And then your favorite match tonight, AJ Lee defeating Brie Bella. I mean, this was pretty much self-explanatory. AJ Lee wasn't going to lose the title. Brie Bella is just not popular enough as a babyface, and that's that.
Yeah, that's that. I agree. Next.
Yeah, nothing more. Randy Orton defeating Daniel Bryan. Really interesting. I knew that Shawn Michaels was going to make a swerve. I knew that he was going to cause a swerve. It was interesting how it panned out in Raw. We'll get to that in a moment. But I think that Randy Orton is a better choice because, like I said last week, and like I've been saying, like Daniel Bryan is starting to get a little bit one-dimensional. I mean, the yes chants are just dying down. They're getting a bit boring, and it's just not like it used to be as far as the craze of the yes chants. People still say it. People are still on the yes craze, but the whole B-plus player is starting to flesh out, you know, a lot more, you know, as we see it, because it's just one-dimensional. And I think that Daniel Bryan needs more steam behind him. He needs to play underdog, but I don't like how they're portraying him as an underdog now. I just don't like it. I think if he wins the Royal Rumble, and that would get some steam and build some momentum back with him. And I think that interesting observation in the chat room is that you could see on the belt that it had orange side plates on the steel. I even observed that. Great observation there. And I guess so it made sense that they already had plans to for Orton to win. Of course they do anyway, but it was pretty apparent. And so built some steam with Daniel Bryan. I think they need more layers on Daniel Bryan. They do, because the whole yes chance, they're going to die out, and he's getting too one dimensional for me.
I don't know. I kind of disagree. I'm the Randy Orton winning was run of the mill. Oh, Randy Orton won, big whoop. I mean, WWE needs something to really. I think it's just kind of dug itself into a hole. If you put the belt on Bryan, it would be good. It'd be fun for a while, but then it would kind of die down. And just to put it on Randy Orton again, it's kind of boring, of course. I wasn't too surprised. I would have been more surprised if Bryan would have won, but the whole Shawn Michaels, yeah, we all knew he was going to So I have Triple H. I don't like how Triple H deemed it. I don't like how they're doing that with, Triple H got knocked out, and I'm feeling sorry for Triple H, and first it was Shawn Michaels. Oh, Shawn, are you okay? Are you okay? I mean, that's just, it's going to blow up in Shawn Michaels' face. And to me, that's a bit uneasy for me, because Shawn Michaels, in my opinion, is the greatest thing that ever happened to the WWE. So it's not too much Shawn Michaels and whatnot, but it's more the fact that if Bryant would have won the title, it would have been a little bit more of a surprise. Then it's Randy Orton winning it again. Okay, big deal. Randy Orton, what's next? So I was kind of unpleased with the outcome, but if the outcome would have been different, I don't know if I would have been any happier with it.
We'll see in the upcoming weeks. Let's get to Raw here. Next trivia question. Let's do a trivia question here. Mid-South Wrestling was owned by who? None of the hosts can answer yet, but Mid-South Wrestling was owned by who? All right, Raw, we get to John Cena cuts a promo in the ring, which was again, more of a, you know, rebirth of the World Heavyweight Championship. This is something I am respecting with John Cena, and I will never be a John Cena fan, but I will respect the fact that he is reviving the World Heavyweight Championship. I have a ton of respect for the legacy of the World Heavyweight Championship. It's been totally diluted, just about tarnished, and I think that Cena is reviving it. So the promo was good. Now I did write an article on the Bleacher Report saying that Damian Sandow, I wrote it the day of Raw, saying that Damian Sandow should cash in on Monday and win, which would set up a Sandow versus Cena feud. Because bottom line is, Alberto Del Rio should go far away from the World Heavyweight Championship picture. He's been an awful World Heavyweight Champion, and he is not a top draw, period. They've put title after title. I think he's had like two or three World Heavyweight Championship runs. He's had two WWE Championship runs within, you know, just about 3 years. And he doesn't work. Roberto Del Rio don't work, and he's just not over. He's not a top draw. And for some reason, they're still trying to do it. They're still trying to thrust Alberto Del Rio at us. It was horrible. And what made it even worse is that Damian Sandow cashed in the Money in the Bank, and he lost. Now, he's the first person that's ever gotten pinned and lost a match legitimately. Now, of course, John Cena cashed it in last year, the WWE Championship, and lost by disqualification. But at the same time, it was a screwy finish, and he lost that way. But Damian Sandow was the first person to actually cash it in legitimately, regular match, and lost. So I think that really shows just how useless, in a way, Damian Sandow is. Because here's the thing. When I remember watching Money in the Bank, and I saw Sandow win, I was just disgusted. I'm like, how in the world are they going to build him as low as he is on a totem pole? How are they going to build him? And we saw it. Sandow may get a heel push after this, but obviously they don't have enough faith in him for him to be champion.
No, they don't, and that's a shame. I thought it was an excellent, excellent match to start off Monday Night Raw.
It was.
And Sandow... I understand what you say that, you know, that's a shame. I mean, he lost Money in the Bank. He cashed it in. Makes me wonder again about John Cena and his elbow injury, but Sandow, he was somebody I couldn't believe that he won Money in the Bank. I can't believe how that could happen. But last night, to me, he played a legitimate role in the match. He showed an awesome heel. But why did he lose? I mean, that's ridiculous. It's crazy. It shows that John Cena is a failsafe for the WWE. He is someone they can absolutely always rely on. he's pretty much all they've got. So that's kind of bold for me to say, but that's how I kind of feel after seeing that last night.
Yeah. The next we get more Biggie Langston against Dean Ambrose, which leads to disqualifications. So we'll probably see something in the future, probably SummerSlam. Leads to a six-man match at the Usos and the Shield. The Shield wins. Then we get Shawn Michaels calling out Daniel Bryan to explain his actions. Michaels really heals it up then. I'm looking forward to how this is going to pan out, because it's interesting how we saw Daniel Bryan get interviewed and then get jumped by the Wyatt family. And we reported on wrestling.com that they're trying to take Daniel Bryan and CM Punk away from the World Heavyweight title scene temporarily. I suppose leading to Survivor Series, I'm okay with Daniel Bryan and CM Punk against the Wyatts. Just that team alone, Daniel Bryan and CM Punk, is appealing, and going against the Wyatt family is, you know, it has an intrigue to it. We need a sixth man. I would say The Miz, maybe Dolph Ziggler. So I think it was an interesting turn of events. There's a lot of people that I saw didn't agree with it, but I think it's a good way to kind of revive and just kind of resurge CM Punk and Daniel Bryan, because both of them it's kind of not been ascending as far as them recently. Daniel Bryan and Randy Orton, it was just an overstretched feud. And then as far as CM Punk is concerned, interesting comment on the chat room. What about Sheamus if he returns as a third? I suppose that may balance it out. Sheamus will add the power and the height and the strength that Eric Rowan and Luke Harper has, but I don't think that he's clear to wrestle until the Royal Rumble. That's where the targeted date for Sheamus is right now, is the Rumble. I think Miz, as far as height, as far as shape, as far as look, I think Miz fits with the underdog, smaller guys as far as Punk and Bryan is concerned. So I think Ziggler would too, but Miz to me is more in that fold than Ziggler is. Either one of them will work. But it's an interesting turn of events, and Shawn Michaels really healed it up on Raw.
Shawn Michaels healed it up a lot. I was actually surprised to see him be that aggressive. You haven't seen that from Shawn Michaels since probably the early, mid-90s almost. Because with DX, he was always kind of carefree and against authority. But it was a surprise. We'll see where this goes. Again, I think it's just going to blow up and make Shawn Michaels look like a fool, just because he's going to know that Triple H played him. However, Bryan and CM Punk are almost kind of in the same boat, kind of a way. They're just both kind of the underdogs. CM Punk, not so much, because he's achieved a lot more than Bryan has. But CM Punk has to kind of rebuild himself and make himself the true player that he claims to be. But that's kind of up to the WWE booking. How are they going to make CM Punk prevail after all this Paul Heyman shenanigans is over with? So, interested to see what's going to happen with it. That's how I see Shawn Michaels kind of playing this out. I hope it's not true, because Shawn Michaels is an icon. But we'll see what goes on. What's next? Monday Night Raw was a great Raw last night. A lot better than the past few weeks, in my opinion.
I am Shawn Michaels, and you will shake my hand. I mean, he really did a good job playing the heel. Lost Matadors against 3MB, they win. And then we get the Bellas losing against AJ and Tamina. Kane versus Miz. We're going to spend a little bit of time on this. We're running out of time here. Kane versus Miz. Kane defeats the Miz. He chokeslams him on Hell in a Cell. And then he calls out Stephanie McMahon. And then he tells her that her power trip is best for business, that the monster is hers to unleash, and then walks to her and hands her the mask. Now, I think we have differing opinions on this because I think this is absolutely horrible. I think that the ugly, maskless Kane should be dead. I mean, Kane...
Please.
Kane should have the mystique. He should have the mask. I know that they probably did that because he played, you know, he had a bald head again at See No Evil 2 and didn't have any hair. And what's so crazy about it is that Kane actually grew. There was a politic interview that he had. He actually grew his hair out. He actually grew a significant portion of his hair out again just to cut it for the movie. And I don't like it. I think it's horrible and just really devalues the legacy of Kane by continuing to flip-flop from face to heel. I mean, come on, have some consistency with Kane. He had the mystique back. I know that when he was with Daniel Bryan, he made it was more of a comical Kane. But when he came back, when he debuted back with the mask, it was just... It was great. It was something that we've been just desiring for so long. Just a couple of years later, for them to just sabotage it. And it's just absolutely horrible. Kane should have went in the Hall of Fame with the mask on, period. Now we get another heel Kane, I guess, working for the corporation. I am totally against it.
Oh, yeah, me too. I want the Kane that has the mask, has long hair. I was really shocked last night. I kind of thought that was Kane's real hair. What is he going to accomplish with this? I mean, I don't see any future with it. Pulls his mask off, hands to Seth McMahon. Yeah, I'm part of the corporation. I don't get where it's going. Obviously, the Kane needs a new direction. I want to see Kane keep going out there, but this made absolutely no sense. And what are they going to do with it? What are they going to do with Kane's mask? Is Stephanie going to start wearing it? I suggest not, because Stephanie looks fine the way she is. But
Either way, it's a bad idea, and just for him keep flip-flopping like that, it's just absolutely horrible. CM Punk defeats Ryback in the street fight. Poor Ryback. Ryback is just useless. I mean, he's just – there is some – you know, we report on wrestling.com that there was some heat on him for not being – not on outside of WWE TV events and certain things that they go to, he doesn't look too happy, and then he's roughing up wrestlers, so he's got some heat on him, so I suppose he's in a doghouse is the reason why he's losing, but it doesn't help him at all, because he's starting to be a big man jobber. I mean, that's really all he is, and he has had multiple opportunities to be a top guy, and he's failed every time. And so just for him to lose two straight nights, CM Punk goes to show how much they do not have any immediate interest, again, in Ryback's career. And as far as Wyatt family attacking CM Punk, I've said this for months. I've wanted a CM Punk versus Bray Wyatt feud. We probably won't get the individual match. But at least they are working together, and I'm very, very happy about Punk and Bray Wyatt working together now. I'm looking forward to the upcoming weeks and how that's going to map out.
Yeah, I don't want to understand what's going to go on either. So, look, keep this going, 347-884-8452. Derek, the Raw correspondent. Well, used to be the Raw correspondent. Pancakes and Power Slams. I got a promotion thanks to Chris Featherstone. Let's keep this going. Absolutely.
Absolutely.
I mean, we could keep this going on for three and a half hours, and it would not be enough time to cover all the wrestling we want to. We've had a lot of fun tonight talking about current wrestling, past wrestling. Keep your tweets going. Keep your chat room. Let's keep going. Chris, what's up next? We got a lot of time going.
Speaking of that, I'll go ahead and let you answer that. That trivia question, Mid-South Wrestling was owned by who? No, Vince stumped. All right, next we have.
Whatever, next. Come on.
Next we have the. I'll give you some time to think about it. Next we have the Real Americans defeating Gold Dust and Cody Rhodes. I was actually okay with this just because it's giving the Real Americans an opportunity. They lost against Los Nadores. They beat Cody Rhodes and Gold Dust. So, of course, either they're going to be placed into a multi-team tag team match at Survivor Series. It is Bill Watts. Congratulations. So they're probably going to be implemented in a multi-team tag team match at Survivor Series, which I'm okay with. I think that the growth of the Real Americans, they were more of a jobber tag team the past couple months, and now they're kind of, you know, staking their claim as a legitimate tag team again. So I'm okay with it. I was okay. I wish that it would have been more of a count out finish or something like that, more than just having Goldust tap, because I think that the Rhodes brothers is too hot to try to extinguish anything that they're doing. But a win by the Real Americans, I'm okay with.
I'm okay with that too. I mean, Real Americans, they've come a long way. They've been around for probably about 5 or 6 months now. At first, they were kind of shocking, and what are they trying to prove? But they've been prominent. They're still there. They're not a dominant tag team, but they are somebody that, it's Monday Night Raw. You're going to see them, so let's keep them going. I like Zeb Coulter.
Absolutely.
He's grown on me, so he's no
oh,
Jim
yeah.
Cornette, but we'll keep him going.
Well, you know, I listened to the show back again from last week and got some interesting feedback from my Cornette bashing. And I have to say, there was, you know, the chat room was laced with people last week and just making comments. And I must say, and I had feedback even after the show, I must say that I am deeply sorry that I didn't go in Cornette more. Let's go next. Natalya and Summer Rae, that's what Natalya should have happened. She should have won. And, yeah, that's as far as that goes. And then we go to the Randy Orton Championship Celebration. I'm not okay with the Big Show being in the World Heavyweight title picture. I'm just not. He shouldn't. I'm okay with Big Show being in the feud, but Big Show against Randy Orton, I'm just not buying it, and I'll just keep it simple as that.
Yeah, the Big Show, he's fun to see. I always love to see the Big Show, but everything's getting kind of – I mean, he will not beat Randy Orton. There's no way. To keep Big Show around, it's kind of a novelty act anymore. I'm glad he's not crying and doing all that, but it's not what – the Big Show, he's finally doing what the Big Show should do. Let me put it that way. It's just, you know, I'm going to come in, I'm going to dominate, knock everyone out. But he's not the person to have the title. He's, like I said 3 seconds ago, he's a novelty act. But kind of, they kind of need him to still stick around because Randy Orton just can't really carry the show himself. That's my opinion. 347-8452.
Yeah.
Tell me that I'm an idiot.
Well, I don't know if
exactly.
Anybody has to call in. Okay, well, we'll go next to we'll go to SmackDown. Just really breeze by it. Real quick, interesting question in the chat room. Is it because of the spinning move by Cesaro that they're getting a push? That's a good question. I think it's because of one of two reasons. The Cesaro swing is a hashtag, is a very popular hashtag now, and that alone, you know, says something. But the Cesaro swing is one of the best spots in wrestling right now. And, again, I am waiting for the day that somehow Antonio Cesaro and the Big Show is in the same ring and we see a Cesaro swing on the Big Show. I don't know what I would do. I'll probably write a article specifically towards the Cesaro swing if that happens. I am looking
forward
to that.
I remember when Goldberg, I was live, 1998, and I think it was Columbus, Ohio, that Goldberg had, he put him up in the, what do they call that, where he...
Jackhammer.
Yes. And he had him up for like 12 seconds. I've seen that before.
Yeah. It was a really good... Goldberg would put some people up in the job.
He would, yeah, but yeah, come on. Cesaro's swing, give me a break. It's okay, but
are you serious?
It's center of gravity. Come on.
Come on now. But you gotta be kidding me. You got a 235-pound, 240-pound guy. I mean, Cesaro's not, you know, he's not
physics.
Like monstrously built. You know, but at the
gravity.
Same time, it's gravity. But okay, so do you think could you airplane spin or helicopter swing or giant swing is what it is, giant swing? Could you
with the
do
right
that?
Velocity? Yes.
Come on. I guarantee you in your work in the Indies, you've never. Was able to giant swing someone. I'm sure that you could body slam. You've done that many times.
347, 84, 84, 52. I could do it.
There's no way that you could giant swing Brodus Clay. That guy is just a big load of mass, and there's no way that you could do that. No way. And you know, you're not a you're a decent, you know, size guy. You're
you
not
could
like
do
a
it. Yeah, I mean,
so.
Yeah, personally, I couldn't do it, but it can be done. And I enjoy it. It's,
yeah.
It's fun. Good for everybody,
no.
For all the mouth breathers.
It's a fun spot. People like the spot. And
but you
again,
can't get a three count on somebody for making them dizzy.
What in the world? Why can't you? They're not able to realize that they're being pinned. They're going to be so dizzy.
You're dizzy. You're not
gonna be
drunk.
You're drunk dizzy. Might as well.
Yeah,
give the Cesaro swing some credit. The Cesaro swing is a top spot right now, and it's over. People like it, and it's actually – it may backlash because it may pull Cesaro away from the Real Americans because he's starting to get pops from it, so –
he'll be a
well, anyway, I don't know. They should give him some love, though. We want to see Cesaro as a face. He was a face in Chicago before, and so he's been a face before. Not so much in ROH, but in Japan he has been. So I think it will work. I think Cesaro would work as a face, and hopefully we'll see that. There's been rumors tossing around that he may, but let's zoom through here and get to the flavor of the week here. SmackDown again. SmackDown Impact Wrestling. I say this every week, and I'm going to continue to say it. WrestlingInc.com. Every week I write an extensive media-laced Impact Wrestling and WWE SmackDown review filled with tweets from usually the winners or tweets from the WWE Universe. Just follow it. Check it out on WrestlingInc.com. Impact Wrestling Review and WWE SmackDown Review. Real quick, Michael, it's interesting things about SmackDown. Not much. Usos defeating Rowan and Harper, I think that was good for them. And the Culture's promo on stage was really funny. And then that's about it as far as the and the 8-man tag team match was a really good match. Daniel Bryant, Biggie Langston, Goldust, and Cody defeating Randy Orton and The Shield. That was good, but it also was kind of like a prequel to Daniel Bryan probably losing in what he did. As far as Impact Wrestling is concerned, more AJ and Dixie just exchange that was it was mostly revolved around AJ Styles winning the championship, the TNA World Heavyweight Championship from Bound for Glory. Bully Ray comes out, has a verbal exchange with AJ, punches him in the stomach, about to pile drive him, but Mr. Anderson returns. It was a weird return to me, and him and him and Mr. Ander, him and Bully Ray should make a decent feud, but I don't think it'll last long. And then we got Gail Kim with Lady Taffel. I don't understand why Lady Taffel's with Gail Kim if she's trying to expose, you know, just kind of break out as a star. Her and Brooke defeated Velvet Sky and ODB. Ethan Carter III, as many people who do not follow TNA as much, he was known as Derek Bateman in NXT. He defeated Dewey Barnes, which reminded me of, like, Bob Backlund mixed with Shark Boy, mixed with Brutal Bob Evans from ROH. It was an interesting mixture of those, and it was pretty funny. Kurt Angle in-ring promo interrupted by Bobby Roode. They're continuing that feud, which is good. The Bro-Man celebration was cheesy. There was some funny spots to it, and a bunch of tag teams comes in, enhancing their tag team division as well. And then, basically, AJ Styles defeats Bully Ray, distraction by Anderson, and then AJ rejects the contract again. And then lastly, let's go to ROH real quick. Jimmy Jacobs defeats Silas Young, and then we get David Richards defeating Ricky Marvin, and then a good match with Eddie Edwards and Kevin Steen, which Eddie Edwards wins, so good main event there. All right, so let's go to the flavor of the week. We have part three of who is going to – which of these should be in the Hall of Fame. So we had a lot of names so far. We've had Bam Bam Bigelow, Big Boss Man, Demolition, British Bulldog. These are previous weeks. Alundra Blaze, Lita, Earthquake, One Man Gang. And now we are going to – add in six more. Let's start with Sid Vicious. Sid Vicious, of course, he joined the Horsemen. You know, that was one of his biggest spots in the WWE in the beginning. In the WCW in the beginning. Kind of had a short stint with them. Skyscrapers became one of the biggest names in the WWE in the mid to late 90s, around 97 or so. Even had a match at WrestleMania against The Undertaker when he was a WWE champion. So, and of course, that horrible spot when he just broke his leg in half, basically, against Scott Steiner. And then we saw him again last year doing the Heath Slater Legends angle, Legends moments leading into Raw 1000. So with all that, he's done a lot. Tag team, world heavyweight, you know, he's WCW is a big name, won the world heavyweight championship there as well. So with all of the credentials that Sid has, I would say a thumbs up as far as putting him in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, I would too. And again, Psycho Sid's a bit of an afterthought, but not really. I mean, he's been around for a long, long time. With when he started out with NWA, WCW, he was in WWE for a while, Psycho Sid, Sid Justice, so I remember him, and as a no-brainer, of course, yeah, Psycho Sid, Sid Justice, of course. He's not somebody that they should build the Hall of Fame around, as far as like when they do the ceremony during 2014 will be the next one. It's not somebody that would come out last, but he's somebody that should be in there, and I believe it. Yep. I'd get behind it. Thumbs up.
Absolutely. Next, we have Brian Pillman. Now, I've actually had some interesting conversations about this to others. And I think that, I tell you, Pillman, he never was a top guy. He never was a focal point to any federation except for maybe ECW when he kind of, you know, honed his loose cannon gimmick. But I tell you, Hollywood Blondes, Flying Brian, Hart Foundation, his feud with Steve Austin,
I got to put him in there. I got to say thumbs up to Brian Pillman. I think he achieved, even when he was with Stampede with the Hearts, he's been around for a while, and he's really shown, even with his size, that he can, that he has so much charisma. His mic work is very edgy, and he had that appeal to him. Unfortunately, he left us a little bit prematurely in many people's eyes. But at the same time, I think that he should be posthumously inducted in the Hall of Fame. I think he deserves it. Thumbs up for Brian Pillman.
I totally agree. Thumbs up. I love Brian Pillman. From the first time I remember seeing him in WCW is Flying Brian. And just when he was with the WWE, his feud with Stone Cold Steve Austin, his feud with Goldust, his time with the Hart Foundation, he made the most of that. And that was somebody that you could just see his heart and soul was into this business. He was somebody that you could just say, Brian Pillman was an absolute animal. I loved him. I think he's great. I think anybody from my generation growing up watching wrestling would say Brian Pillman, definitely put him in there. He deserves it, bar none. His time, again, just in the 90s alone with the WWE, fantastic. Put him in. Thumbs up.
Absolutely. Totally agree. Next name we have is none other than, drum roll please, DDP. Diamond Dallas Page. Interestingly enough about Diamond Dallas Page was he really made a name as a manager in the beginning. When he managed the Diamond Stud and in the WCW, and he also had some work in the very beginning when he was with AWA, and so he was with Hennick for a second with the Diamond Doll, and so they were the Diamond Exchange, and so he had, and I even think international world class or something like that. He was in another semi-reputable federation in the early 90s, late 80s. So he really honed himself as a manager. And then when he came into WCW in the early 90s, he managed the Freebirds. And so it wasn't until, he was in his mid-30s, close to 40, when he started to really break out as a star and this really became one of the biggest names in the WWE in the late 90s. And so, his run in the WCW was rather forgettable, but at the same time, I think that I would give DDP a nod. I would give him a thumbs up. I think that he has definitely been, and of course the DDP yoga, as far as just being instrumental in changing the lives of Jake Roberts and Scott Hall. So even post wrestling, he's leaving a legacy. So I'll put him in there. I'll say thumbs up for DDP.
Yeah, definitely thumbs up for DDP. I believe that as well. He's somebody that probably not in the next 2 or 3 years, but in the next 5 years, he will be in the Hall of Fame. Just for his character, his charisma, in and outside of the ring, and especially almost being in his 40s when his career was like at his peak, and that doesn't happen for almost anybody. Nobody can really have the career that DDP had, starting out as just a manager and yada yada yada, coming up to the big times, and being a major staple on WCW Nitro. He was DDP, South High Five. Definitely thumbs up. He will be there in the future.
I think so, too. I think that he will be in the WWE Hall of Fame for sure. Next name we have is none other than Terry Taylor. Terry Taylor definitely was one of the hottest names in the Mid-South, the Mid-Atlantic, in the early mid-80s. And then he, after that, you know, he had some more NWA work when the National Heavyweight Championship was popular. I remember him feuding with Buddy Landell over it for the National Heavyweight Championship, and that was in mid '80s when people like Dusty Rhodes and your boy Terry Tully Blanchard. That's when people like them, they were National Heavyweight Champion around the mid '80s, and it was a pretty good. It was like an intercontinental title, to the WWE, a little bit higher, and so it was a good, belt, and actually got revived, actually retired. It was unified with the U.S. title in '86 and got revived in '97 in the NWA. Terry Taylor can say that he achieved that. But I mean, of course, we got the Red Rooster when he went with the York Foundation with Alexandra York, as we of course with she was Melina and Dustin Rhodes' former wife, and she was a heel manager. He went heel with Terrence Taylor, but that's really about it. And so when he was the Red Rooster, I mean, he was just really a mid-card at best. I remember there was a time that Bobby Heenan just really buried the mess out of him in a segment. I think it was either the funeral parlor or the barbershop, one of those. I think it may have been the funeral parlor, but either one of those. But I'm gonna say thumbs down for Terry Taylor.
You would, because I said thumbs down. I don't think, yeah.
I had no
I mean,
clue
anything,
that you were going to say thumbs down.
I know you did. I'd give him an honorable mention for the fact that, I mean, I know he's done a lot of behind-the-scenes work with WWE, WCW, and WA. As far as developmental talents go, thumbs down. I mean, for his wrestling career himself, it's nothing. I'd be proud of it if that was me, so I don't want to take that away from him. But as far as like a wrestling fan's concerned, I personally know he's done a lot more for the business behind the scenes than he has in front of the scene. So, yeah, and I'd give him a thumbs down. If anything, I don't want to say he doesn't deserve to be in the Hall of Fame, but it would be like an honorable mention type of thing. So, yeah, thumbs down.
Yeah. Next we have Tugboat.
Thumbs down.
I guess there's no, there's not even much of a issue with Mr. Ottman here. I was at least going to give him some type of build up. Florida. He did some FCW work, and then, of course, Tugboat, Natural Disasters. He made a heel turn and teamed up with Earthquake. And then, dun-dun-dun, 1993, ladies and gentlemen, Flair for the Gold, setting up for Clash of the Champions, setting up for the War Games, I believe it was. It was that Clash of the Champions. And, ladies and gentlemen, one of the most embarrassing spots that we've ever, ever, ever witnessed. The man trips over the wall, over a plank on the wall. There's some stories about the whole plank incident. There was some mistiming. There was someone who wasn't aware that the plank was there and that it stayed there, that it was kind of fixed in there, and they didn't take it out. So whatever the case may be, it was probably the most embarrassing moment in the history of wrestling when he tripped over, and that just took away any type of mystique for the Shockmaster, and he just became a joke. And really, post Shockmaster, nothing. I mean, he did some stints in Japan, but after that Shockmaster incident, he just really that really just cemented his career as being a joke. So, thumbs down for me.
Yeah, thumbs down. Come on. I remember the Tugboat when, you know, back in fourth, fifth, sixth grade. Great memories. Yeah, Tugboat, whoever. But, yeah, the Shockmaster, how could you not see that plank in front of your – I mean, it was like by his knees. How could you not see
yeah.
that? I mean, unless you're wearing a blindfold. But, anyway, as far as what you've seen in ring action, I mean, he was – no. It doesn't – he was kind of like – John Tenta had a much better resume than Tugboat. So, and I honestly remember, wasn't he supposed to be like Hulk Hogan's best friend or little cousin or something back in the day?
Yeah, he was supposed to be like
something like
friend.
That. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Big deal. Who cares? He sucks. So, yeah, I remember Tugboat. Fond memories of him when I was a kid sitting on my floor watching wrestling when I was fourth grade. Other than that, no. The Hall of Fame, are you kidding me? Thumbs down.
Yeah. Had to throw someone in there that just was an oddball. And just so we can – just so Tugboat can have some pancakes and power slams exposure. And, heck, I don't know. I might try to talk to some of his peoples and bring them on the show. Who knows? Speaking of that, we got some fun things in store. I appreciate he's done and Derek's done a great job, fantastic as always. Thank you, Derek, so much for your work this week and this new format. We'll continue to build on this new format. We got a new time coming here in the new year, so pay attention to our new year show. We got some more things in store. We got some special guests coming, setting up for that. And we also have our 100th show coming within a few months. And so we got some fun things in store for our 100th show. And just continue, I looked at the numbers last as far as last week's, just continuing to grow, continuing to get a lot of emails concerning other websites and other people that want to do some work with Pancakes and Power Slam. So keep them coming. 347-884-8452 is the number put in your back pocket. Email cravewrestling@gmail.com. If you are interested in doing any type of advertising, sponsoring, we can hook you up and give us a 30-second snippet. Already ready. You know, we don't want to have to do, you know, it would come as something that won't probably be to your financial liking. I'll say that if we have to do some work ourselves, if the Crave Wrestling team have to do some work ourselves. So it would be best if you send the 30-second snippet of, you know, whatever company you are, whatever wrestling federation you are, got a show, 30-second snippet, 30-second advertisement, already have the media ready because, you know, we've had people that wanted to get some love, but they don't have the media ready. So have the media ready and send us 30 seconds to cravewrestling@gmail.com. Of course, we have the Bleacher Report, Chris Featherstone, wrestling.com, Chris Featherstone. Check out my Retro Wednesday article that I'll do tomorrow, as always. Until next week, fantastic show as always. Thank you for the chat room involvement. Thank you for the tweets. We're going to take some calls. Just hold on tight. In the coming weeks, we'll open it up for calls. Until next week, thank you so much for all your support, and have a great week and enjoy your week of wrestling. God bless.